Hello friend. Welcome back. This is my new Care Audio series. Just a little project I've been working on in order to support my carer peer support role. Now I run many carer engagement forums in South London that gives unpaid carers, a chance of having engagement with mental health services, health providers and those in authority, basically those make important decisions that affects unpaid carers and families in the community. Now, for the new year, at the time of this recording, the new year being 2020, I will start also running new carer peer support groups. Now, I've realized it's not physically possible to be able to reach all unpaid carers at a carer centre. But with the use of the internet, I hope to turn things around. Now, these audios seek to help unpaid carers find some hope in their role as a carer. Hence, as we know, a carer is a person who is not a care worker, but is looking after someone in the family, a friend or a neighbor, and this actual audio is about that. Now, just as a reminder, the first section of this audio deals with things on an educational level, and I think it's really important that education is a tool to provide others on the situation and the complex world of being a carer. The next section of the audio, and I probably will, as usual, count down to that section, is more therapeutic and is aimed at the unpaid carer listening. Although I don't particularly mind who's listening, it just goes to show why therapeutic and self-help audios are useful for anyone, to be honest, whether they're a carer or not. So as I've mentioned before, today's topic is, I say even though it's a quite common, it's actually a complex issue, and it's on carers' identity. And I hope we have some health professionals listening. I don't mind. These are my views. I'm sure there's so much more to it, and I can easily write a massive book on the subject due to my many years. Not only just caring, but being involved in health, in the health services, training staff on the world of carers. Well, anyway, let's get on with it. This is the educational section. As a reminder, what is a carer? Basically, as I mentioned, carers is anyone, and this includes children and also adults who look after a family member, a partner or friend who needs that help because obviously the cared for has an illness, and it could be a disability or there is a fragility, I suppose. But although the word carer in itself is not always as simple as we make it out to be, because we can actually have different types of carers. I think one of the most important ones, I suppose, would be young carers. Often, children very young, even as young as age as 5, having to care for someone, and it could be the parents who unfortunately may have picked up a disability or suffering with mental health or an addiction. And that is a common issue. Other types of carers could be, friends offering some sort of companionship, trying to help around the house, especially for older age adults, for an elderly person living by themselves. In fact, I've noticed online a lot of health services, National Health Service trusts running campaigns to fight isolation and loneliness, especially for an aging population. Now, other types of carers, probably another common one would be adult carers, again providing support either to their parents, because over in the UK it's an aging population, we're all living longer, who have, let's say, doesn't have to be always mental health, but it could be mobility problems, illnesses that are linked to old age. We also have family carers, like it could be a partner looking after a spouse, or even a relative suffering from complex medical condition. Could be multiple sclerosis or even dementia. And also mental health carers, that's another type of carer. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm just going to, just a brief lot, just give an idea of the complexity and the types of carers. But as I mentioned, mental health carers, they are ones looking after someone close who has a mental illness. What else can I think of? I've heard from the term sandwich carers. Again, I've mentioned younger carers, but again, as you know, younger carers struggle. So they might have an older adult, let's say a grandparent, stepping in to provide support to that young carer, who that young carer is probably looking after their parent. Distant carers, they're trying to care for someone not close to them, but obviously someone they care for, but physically there might be that lifeline to that person, but they're just far away. And I think also older adults caring for themselves, which is again becoming more fairly common. Of course, there are many other types of carers, but the ones I've just mentioned, let's say, is only the start and probably the most common lot. And it is important to mention them because it leads on to what the issues are in regards to carer identity. So what happens when someone starts becoming a carer? What things come with the identity? After all, when I started as a carer, you know, I did not know I was classified as a carer for some years. So, for instance, if someone starts becoming a carer, for some people, they begin or may begin to lose their identity, their own identity, as the role can demand more than they realized. And it's like a person actually almost froze themselves desperately at that caring role to keep that cared for person alive and in some form of recovery. Now, the more that new carer starts to care, the more the person is known for that caring role and can lose touch with their own connections, their own worth, and lose connections to social and professional contacts. Also, you can have, basically because the person providing care, if their identity is not supported, then there is a risk of just coping rather than trying for the carer to try and provide that care for that they cared for. And I'll talk about this later on in this audio. Now, when I'm talking about care identity, I feel that the unpaid care identity is vital because of the nature of caring can be a backseat sort of role. You know, just think as to why I'm making this audio. In its nature, carers tend to be more quiet and just carry on in their role providing support. Not to say that they weren't in some sort of form of caring relationship anyway, and I'm talking about caring in the family. Unfortunately, if you look at the different structures of health and social care system, and it differs from places to places, be it in the UK or outside the UK, usually the health and social care system is geared towards the patient. After all, the patient is the one that needs the help. The patient is the one that needs the care and support. But the culture and nature of the health and social care system can, and not always knowingly, it can be unconscious, it can drown out the carer's experiences and identity. Now, I like to remind that not all health and social care systems are like this, because some are well thought out and developed and can provide support to unpaid carers. But some culprits, some actually behaving badly, and I'll get to this in later audios, can damage the carer's identity. But others out there can shine a good example of being, let's say, an integrated carer system. Another issue, especially in regards to carer's identity, is that it doesn't really help if the professional carer or care worker or even foster carers seek to dominate the carer identity, as suffering from the caring role can bring in forms of charity, status, and often, let's say, a misconception that we are all carers. But the title and definition is of the unpaid, take note the word unpaid, carer, who are doing things out of emotional attachment, out of love, and out of obligation, rather than for the money. Since care workers, although I admit they're not paid a huge amount, do get more support. Yes, I admit care workers and foster carers have their own problems, but it should not take away the identity of the unpaid carer. Now, when all these identity issues and identity struggles are all put together, then the unpaid carer loses out. Not only on identity, but on even more importantly, on carer's rights, which are there to protect the carer from identity problems. But wait, now there is more in regards to the carer identity crisis and issues. And, you know, why is there an issue on people knowing what a carer is and then avoiding that term? How about carer stigma, which is also involved in the idea of the carer identity? Now, I'd like to give some examples of carer stigma. If you don't even know what that is, you know, it's only fair. This is an audio about carer identity. And also the damage carer stigma can do to carer identity. Now, although it is the person's right not to have labels forced on them, as they can still carry on caring regardlessly, but remember, it's also important that the person knows what support and rights they should get, and it should not be an excuse to avoid dealing with unpaid carers. Hence, if someone says, look, I don't want to be termed as a carer, it doesn't mean that the health professional or the social care worker would say, okay, well, you're not a carer, so therefore I don't have to support you. We want to avoid the scenario of these situations, and I think it's as avoiding a human right. So going back to carer stigma, what can be classed as carer stigma? What is the example for carer stigma? And there's many examples. It's very complex. I think the first thing would be, let's say, some people, even if they know they are carers, they would just carry on caring regardlessly, you know. But why, you know, why do like other people turn around and say, look, I don't want to be known as a carer? Because, and I'll give you a good example, some people might find it insulting that someone's decided to call them, look, you know, okay, you're now a carer. And that person will say, look, you know, I've been caring for my wife or my husband for so many years, so why are you saying that I'm a carer now? I would provide care and support anyway, so don't call me a carer. And, you know, some people new to the caring role may feel that the carer label is very frightening, because there is a fear for the future in how long they will be caring for. It is a big role. You're now going to care for someone that will need your support, and you're not trained in it. Someone's just said, okay, you're a carer. The person's been diagnosed with this illness. You're a carer. Let's see what you can do. You know, that's a scary and frightening thought, because especially if, you know, one day that care, you know, that person that you love or that you care for may succumb to that very illness. So a lot is on their shoulders. It also does not help that the world of caring actually is not often celebrated as it should be. This can put people off to be honest. You know, carers, no, unfortunately, I don't think they're valued as contributing to society as people who are earning a lot of money. And basically the way society is, they tend to value those who are earning more, spending more, and suppose feeling that they're more skilled. Carers save the economy in the UK billions. We also have double stigma. It doesn't just have to be carer stigma alone. We can even have double stigma of caring for someone with certain illnesses. A good example again is the mental health illness. Many carers, and I've got to admit, even myself, you know, I was ashamed of sharing experiences or my identity because, you know, I didn't want others to know that I was caring for someone with a particular illness, and this can be classified as other carers out there who are again caring for someone with an illness that brings stigma by itself. And it's not even just the stigma of the illness. You now have what you've perhaps always had, complex cultural issues as well. A good example is even very religious societies, families, communities thrown in that mix can probably make it, and I don't know the word for it, make it really difficult for someone to be deemed as a carer. In fact, I would say certain religious practices will avoid the mental illness issue and avoid where families can step in or when community can step in and provide care and support. Not to say all religions are like this, but I'm just pointing out what can add to stigma. So, okay, we have looked at carer stigma, we've looked at carer identity, but you know, what about carer discrimination? What about if a caring role does get out of hand, how can carers be pushed out? Which means many would not be honest about their role, especially at work. Remember, there are all sorts of pressures to perform at work. So obviously, when the employee has someone that they're caring for and they're really unwell, they're really sick, the person may feel obligated to take time off work to provide that support to the person they love, the family. Now, there are many acts and laws from the government that are there to protect carers from discrimination, because caring should come naturally to all people and it is a human right. Now, if work environments begin to discriminate against carers, then obviously no one would even want to have a family or even bother to even look for work if they feel they're going to be pressured to that point. Now, I'm going to take a report from Carers Oxfordshire, you know, a carers charity over in Oxford, and they report that carers may find that they experience stigma because either they or the person that they look after, you know, perhaps has a mental illness. Now, mental health problems are covered by the Equality Act 2010, which replaces the Disability Discrimination Act and aims to end discrimination against disabled people in circumstances including employment, education, and the provision of goods or services. This is going back to the situation of stigma. We also have another struggle of carer identity, and this is again something that I am still battling with, and probably for the foreseeable future. Now, this particular struggle is that you now know that you are a carer, and that you now know that you need to be identified as a carer, but unfortunately, health and social care services still struggle in a carer identification. Why? Well, here are some good examples. We'll take NHS England. Now, they report that 70% of carers come into contact with health professionals, yet Health professionals only identify 1 in 10 carers, especially with GPs. And even then, the GPs will probably, I'd say, deal with even a lower percentage of that, even if they did identify them. So the question will be asked is, what happens when carers are not identified? And this is not only just GP surgery, we're also talking about social care as well. Well, what I tend to think is that if a carer is not identified, the most common thing is that they will lose out on care support and services, something that, again, the Care Act aims to support families and carers on. Also, carers will struggle, if they lose out on the support and services, carers will struggle to cope in their role as a carer. And that starts a chain reaction where the cared for is not getting that support either. If care is not identified, we also have, and this is relates to GPs really, you also have a risk of carers having their health decline due to that lack of support. So in turn, a GP not only has to deal with the patient, they've got another patient, that being the carer, to deal with, which we all want to avoid. More reasons on what happens when carers are not identified is that, unfortunately, this can lead to families and carers becoming bitter and disenchanted about health and social care services. They just do not want to engage with them because of bad experiences. And worst of all, if carers are not identified, carers can just tend to walk away from that role. This can lead to family breakup, the patient or the cared for not getting any support or any care, and probably worst of all, they will succumb quicker to the illness that the cared for has unfortunately have. So with all these issues, being stigma, identity and discrimination, and being identified, how can we tackle, you know, what ways are there to tackle the crisis of care identity? First thing is, you know, what are you doing now? You're listening to this audio. That is, I would say, one form of training and educating people or carers about the caring role. And it's not just carers. It's also, I'd say, training the professionals, you know, in carer identity, carer awareness. This being like, you know, your GP, your doctor, nurses. It doesn't just stop with doctors. It can even go on nurses on the wards. In fact, I'm doing this, you know, by the time I'm doing these audios, I've been doing this for years. Social workers, they may feel they know a lot about carers. It might be run of the mill, but it's not always that. It's also re-educating, retraining, especially when new policies, act and laws come out. And it's not only just training, it's also developing links with carer centers and carer agencies that deal with specific illnesses. It could be, connecting links to care centers where they have a mental health carer advocate or lead, or an older adult carer specialist. You also got specific groups out there providing support or peer support to carers. And then again, they can be, like you say, a link to the GP surgery, to the hospital ward, where carers can be referred on to, but not to the point where the GP isn't doing anything. You do have GPs just referring and not providing some support. We also could also have, and I think this is vital, this is something I need to push for as well, in where there should be carers registers, especially at GP surgeries, and carers should be encouraged to identify themselves as the carer, so that way the doctor's surgery can provide support to that carer. It could be like as simple as a health check. It could be keeping a list so certain groups and workshops and consultations are run at that surgery or even on the hospital ward. You also, what could help tackle the carer crisis and carer identity crisis? And it could be providing carer leaflets from carer centres, information and posters about carer support in that area, support and education information on how carers can help in regards to caring for someone with a particular illness. And it also should be, this is a tough one, there should be a dedicated carer lead in not only in the community or the ward or in the or even the GP surgery, but if a particular dedicated care officer is around, that can take the strain off health professionals and have a way to organize staff in dealing with carers. And these are only some of the ways to tackle a carer identity issues as that I've raised before. Obviously a lot of it is on education, and that can only come with engagement to families and carers. So to cap this off, why is care identity important to unpaid carers like myself and many other carers out there? And I feel it's because without us understanding what we have taken on and how it defines our role, it is harder to know what support we have out there. And I'm talking about carers themselves. It is harder for carers to connect to others and fight for their own rights, you know, which is a human right. It is harder to be acknowledged for all the hard work that we do as a carer, as a resource. Because, as you know, the health services as it is cannot possibly step in and take over. They just can't do it. And, you know, it shouldn't be a system where families and carers are not recognized. They don't know who they are and they don't know why they're doing it. They're just thrown at that resource. They might not even want to do it, but because the way the health system is, because it's lacking in that resource, families and carers are obligated to do what they can or what they must. And as you know, the health system would collapse if more families and carers decide to say, oh, we're just going to walk away. But on that note, I think with all the issues raised, I think it's time to start on the more therapeutic section of this audio. And this is aimed at unpaid carers to reflect on who they are and why it is important to let others know who they are, starting in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Well, thank you for taking the time and getting to this part of the audio. You're now listening to the empowering and therapeutic part of this audio. And yeah, it was a long session, but I'm glad that you've made it this far. And I think, you know, I think you already know that it is hard struggle to be recognized. Even if not for your role caring, being self-aware of yourself, I think, is more important. And without that, we would struggle. I think we should never lose our badge, our carer's badge, and we should never lose our identity. There will be times, I suppose, when people try and cloud the issue and say that the health professional is more important or the cared for is more important. But my view is that we are all equally important and that we all should try and work together. Unfortunately, of this moment, I feel the care is taking the back seat, not giving up or anything, but in nature, they're putting others first and putting themselves last. You know, taking on that silent role, providing care. You know, is it any wonder why people actually walk away from the role when they do not know for sure who they are. They do not know how to deal with what they've taken on. No one has identified them, and when identified, there was little means of support or follow-up. No one should have to make the choice of walking away from someone they love, be it family or a loved one who have become unwell and depends on them. Even if it's a parent or a child, we as carers all deserve to be counted. And it is no shame to say it that I am a carer. Now go ahead. Say those very words. I am a carer. I am an unpaid carer. It should be empowering. And it is. I am a carer that deserves to be recognized, and I will be recognized and supported. If you can't say it, think it. Think in a way where you can think as, I will be counted and considered as a vital link and relation to the cared for. There is no shame in it, no stigma, no confusion, I would say. It is your right as a human to love and support those you are close to, be it your family, friend, or someone you hold close. Just remember, it is your right to be known as a carer, because it is not an easy journey. You've been listening to Matthew McKenzie, a carer, providing, let's say, free support to unpaid carers online, offline, or whenever I've been wandering around in South London, West London, or East London. Please spread the word, and I'd say thank you for many care centres now placing my audios off their website. The next topic is on You Are Not On Your Own. But I'd like to say again, thank you for listening to this audio, and good luck in your caring journey. See you next time.